stop another year.
No. Hey, today on the podcast, we're happy to have boys basketball coach at Sunnyside Christian High School, Dean Wagenaar, with us. In 24 years as the basketball coach at Sunnyside Christian, Wagenaar's career record is 508-118. In his 24 seasons, the Knights have 20 State B tournament appearances, 18 league championships, and 16 district titles. The Knights also have 8 regional championships and 15 state placings that include 7th in 2006 and 2009, 5th in 2001, 4th in 2003 and 2012, 3rd in 2016, state championships in 2002, 2005, 2007, 2008, 2010, 2011, 2017, 2018, and 2019. The Knights have a postseason record of 120-29. They also have a Spokane Arena record of 34-12 and a Yakima Sun Dome record of 14-2. Coach Wagenaar was born and raised on an old school family farm in Northwest Iowa. He graduated from Unity Christian High School in Orange City, Iowa, and then Dort College in Sioux Center, Iowa. Coach is also the high school principal and athletic director at Sunnyside Christian. Welcome, Coach. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much, Dave, for inviting me to join you for a podcast today. I appreciate the opportunity. I hope that it's something that you're looking for. I don't know if your listeners are looking to listen to me ramble on, but I'll try to be concise here.
Hey, that's great, Coach. Hey, first, how are you and the family doing?
We're doing well. Obviously, you know, I don't know if you know my family very well or any of them, but Glenda and I have 4 kids.
Yeah.
And you're probably aware of a couple of them if you follow State B basketball, because the older two boys have been a big part of that. But
right.
Trevor's 26 now. He's an agronomist in the Valley. He works for Nutrien. Our daughter Danica is 24, and she is an ICU nurse at Cadillac Hospital in Richland. And Luke, child 3, he just started his junior year at Northwest Nazarene University in Nampa, Idaho.
Cool.
And then the tail ender, number 4, Cole, is just starting school here as a sophomore. So,
wow.
The 4 kids are a big part of our lives, obviously, and it's good to see them. We haven't seen a lot of Danica because she has to wear her hazmat suit every shift and is very careful just to protect us and the family, and especially Grandpa and Grandma. She doesn't want to be the one that spreads the virus. So she's been a little bit more careful. We go down and see her, and we'll visit her at a park, but see Trevor quite a bit, and Luke just left, so it's all good.
All right. Hey, how are your school and community coping these days with this thing?
Well, I think after about 2 weeks in March, the community pretty much decided to just live normally.
Yeah.
And so decided to do that as a rural agricultural community. Obviously, most of the people still went to work.
Right.
And so you couldn't really notice much of a change around here other than schools were shut down.
Yeah.
And, of course, we made the adjustment within 5 days to go online.
It
went very quickly.
That's great.
You know, the pandemic, I think, at least with the people that I am involved with on a day-to-day basis, almost all of them want us to open up and get busy and get started. But obviously that's not the will of our elected officials on the west side.
Yeah.
And so we have to live with what's going on and make the best of it. And so I do think we're one of 3 high schools in the entire Yakima County that is open at this point. Riverside Christian, LaSalle and us are the only ones who are open.
Wow. So how has the first few days gone getting back to school?
Well, we from the start followed OSPI's template for reopening. Yeah. And so as an administrator, we were meeting every Monday throughout the summer to make sure that we were checking all the boxes on that.
Yep.
So as the kids have come back, they're excited to, I think, to return to somewhat of normal.
Yeah.
But there's so many restrictions at this point that it's a little bit sterile. But I think that they'll grow into it. They're missing the extras.
Yes.
You know, we've cut out our PE classes right now, though technically we could do something like that. We don't have band because that's frowned upon in a big way. And then, of course, there's no practices for athletics. So it's a little bit of a sterile environment. Now, the learning is right where it should be. Obviously, the classes are intense, but we've told the teachers you're going to have to let the kids get outside and have mass breaks and just make them distance, and because that gets pretty wearing that thing all day.
Oh, absolutely. So, hey, got a question for you. How did a kid from Iowa get to the state of Washington?
Well, I don't know how long you want this podcast to go, so I'll try to keep some of this stuff pretty short.
Yeah.
Crazy story. I'm a tail ender. I'm the last child of seven siblings, eight children total. And I'm way on behind. So way back in the mid-70s, I had two brothers who the second one had just gotten married, and they decided to move to Washington State, to Linden.
Oh.
And so I'm just a little kid. They move out here. My parents come out here to visit them a couple of times. Don't think much of it. I see them off and on. But then when I went to college, my brother had encouraged me to come out and work out in Linden. And so I went to Dort my first year, and ironically, second semester, I met a young lady from Sunnyside. And I knew her first semester, but I didn't date her at all, Glenda.
Right.
But then as the end of the year came to a close, I said, I'm headed to Linden anyway. Why don't I just take you home? And she said, that sounds like a good idea. So on the way out to Linden, I stopped in Sunnyside, dropped her off, and then I went and I stayed in Linden. And for the next three summers, I worked in Linden every summer.
Wow.
Lived with my second oldest brother and got to know a family really well that owned a big dairy and had raspberries.
Huh.
And so I put in a lot of hours. In fact, the month of July, most of the weeks were probably about 70 hours a week.
Wow.
And continued to date that young lady. And eventually we got married.
Wow.
And my senior year, we spent a year apart because she went for 2 years to Dort.
Yeah.
And then my senior year, I had four contracts in hand to teach at the end of my senior year. And probably the best job was in Bradenton, Florida.
Yeah.
But I had an uncle and aunt that lived there, and I had been there, and it wasn't a place that I wanted to live. It's just it's too busy. It's just south of Tampa there, and it's almost city, and I just didn't really want to live there. So Sunnyside Christian had an opening, and at the time the principal, he hired me, and I came out here to work at Sunnyside Christian. So that's how I ended up in the state of Washington.
That's amazing. that's a great story, Coach. I didn't realize you were at Linden. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I didn't teach at Linden. That was just when I was in college, but I worked there for three summers. I got to know, and I will tell you one thing. In the summers up there, we played some awesome, awesome summer basketball, both at Linden Christian and at Linden Public. And I think I was on the back end of and I didn't know these guys at all back then, but, oh, man, what was the big tall kid, the 6'10 kid from Linden Christian that went to WSU?
Oh, man.
Big lefty.
Yes. I can't think of his name right now.
And then I played a lot of ball with, was it Lautenbach? Is that his name?
Yeah, Todd Lautenbach, yeah.
Yeah, he was the Linden Public, but it was Dwayne Skolton or something.
Yes, it is. That's
Was that his name?
Yep, it is.
So we'd go down, and I'd play several nights a week because I was a pretty adept player in college, and we had some awesome games, very competitive games up there when I lived up there in the summer.
Oh, I can imagine. Oh, man, that's awesome. So on that track, how did you really get started with the game of basketball? I know Iowa is a really big basketball state. So how'd you get started with the game?
Again, I'm the youngest. Mm-hmm. The brother that I eventually ended up living with, he was in high school. And
yeah.
It was about 1972, 73.
Yeah.
And he was with a group of kids. And Unity Christian was not a very old school. I think it started in about 67, maybe.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. Maybe it was 65. And they had a group of kids that were dedicated. And so in 1974, they won the state championship. Back
wow.
when there, I think there were only two classes.
Jeez.
Classifications. And some of those boys were friends of my brother. And so my uncle would take me to a game now and then. And my dad, mainly my dad, we'd go to a couple games a year. And that's how I got exposed to the game of basketball when I was a little kid.
Wow.
And so we had the old Iowa barn with a basket in the haymow. And my dad built me a little basket, and we put it up and hung it on a door in the rec room of
wow.
our house.
Yeah.
And that's how I started playing basketball.
Oh, that's great.
And it was crazy because my parents were not sports fans at all. In fact, my dad was born in the 20s.
Yeah.
And he started farming with his dad, and they were using horses. And sports to them were something completely foreign. I mean,
yeah.
just you didn't have time for sports. You had to work.
Wow.
And so most of my siblings didn't get the opportunity to even play a sport. But by the time they got to me, they basically said to me, even though it was unspoken, you can play one sport.
Wow.
We'll let you do one sport.
It's amazing.
And the only one that would ever work into a schedule, of course, Iowa, Northwest Iowa winters are pretty intense.
Yeah.
So I started playing ball.
Wow.
That's how I got into it.
That's great. So how did participating in athletics and basketball play a role in who you are today, Coach?
Well, I think it certainly adds a whole dimension to your life that if you hadn't played it, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
And so I don't think, had I not played in high school, I'm almost certain I never would have coached.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't have had exposure to the game. I wouldn't have known the game to a degree. And to be fair, Dave, I never really intended to coach very long. I didn't intend to teach very long.
Gee.
I got into teaching because I grew up in the 70s.
Yeah.
In the early 80s in the Midwest, and the farming economy was terrible. It was terrible. Remember a guy by the name of Jimmy Carter?
Yes.
17% interest rates?
Yeah.
And I was working out for farmers all the time, and I loved farming, and I loved agriculture, and had there been more opportunity, I probably would have gone in that direction. But when you're the
yeah.
fourth son of a father who rents land,
yeah.
The opportunity to farm probably isn't going to be that advantageous for you. You're just not
yeah.
going to have that opportunity. So
true.
I started looking for other jobs that I could do where I could live in a small town, a relatively small town, and make a good living, and teaching
yeah.
was one. And so really my goal was to teach for a while, and then my real goal was to become a state trooper. That was what I intended to do.
I'll be dang. That's amazing.
But, after about 4 years, I was ready to go to the academy in Shelton.
Yeah.
But my wife just came to me and she said, in fact, I was ready not to continue teaching, and she just said to me, she said, Dean, I just don't think I can handle you being gone all the night on the roads with that type of a job. She says, I just don't think I can sleep.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's a great lady, and so I respected that, and I just put aside that intention and continued to teach, and some doors opened, so I stayed teaching.
Yeah. Great. Hey, so who were some big influences on you growing up? Who are some of those people?
You know, I can't speak probably to specific names necessarily.
Yeah.
But I just grew up in a very, very strong Christian community where my parents, pastors, uncles and aunts, good teachers at the Christian schools I attended, and even the coaches I had, you know, I respected them. And I can't say, well, there was one individual that really pointed me in a certain direction. I respected my high school coach, Coach Bauma. But I don't think I really ended up coaching because of him. If I go back to Northwest Iowa, which I don't get back there near as much anymore because both of my parents have passed away, but I still take the time to look him up if I can. But I wouldn't say that was. If you want some influence in my life to coaching, I would probably have to say when I was a young coach, the one influence that really changed my perspective of a comprehensive understanding of coaching would be a person you may never have heard of, and his name is Dick DiVincenzo.
Oh, yes. Yes, stuff.
Dick DiVincenzo.
Yes.
Stuff good players should know, but the book that really had an impact on me was the other one. It was called, and you can still buy it. In fact, PGC still sells it.
Yeah.
Think Like a Champion.
Yes.
That book opened my eyes to and I would say really a dimension of the game of basketball, but also of athletics and life that made me probably recalibrate a lot of the things that I thought about. I got to meet Dick several times on the phone, and I started using his series. He had a series that he would rent to you. It was 10 VHS tapes. And you would spend, literally, you'd watch, each one was about an hour long, and then you would, after you watched one, you'd go into the gym. And back in the early 2000s, I was using that and continued to use it. And then one day I went to his website to rent it for the next year.
Yeah.
And he had passed away.
Ah.
And I guess he wasn't feeling well, and he went in, and he had some advanced form of cancer. And I think within about, 3 to 4 months, he passed away.
Wow.
I didn't know him well, but I had talked to him numerous times on the phone, and he really had a big impact on how I started to approach coaching.
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably been one of the biggest ones early on. Now, obviously, there's been some since then that I've really looked at. The other crazy thing I did that I don't know where I got this idea from. I started to take one coach per year and just study them a little bit.
Yeah.
Pay attention to them.
Right.
And it didn't even have to be a basketball coach. And one that had an impact on me was Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
He was at the University of Miami.
Yes.
And I started reading articles on him and paying attention to what he did and how he ran his stuff. And he had a big impact on me, too, with some of the things that he was doing. So, yeah, those were a couple of people early on. And then, of course, there's been a ton since then. But
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. So you spent 5 years as an assistant to Bob Rip, assisting the Knights in capturing the school's first state title in 1992. So how did that experience kind of help you when you became the head coach there at Sunnyside?
Well, I want to give Bob Rip and Terry Cock a ton of credit. Terry Cock was the high school principal here. He hired me.
Got it.
When I came here, obviously those two had set in really in motion a program that was going to be successful because they were both very knowledgeable basketball coaches.
Yep.
And when I came, I still remember Terry interviewing me, and this was before I moved here, and he said, "Hey, we need an assistant basketball coach. What do you think?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'm going to be busy teaching. Do I really want to do that?" I says, "You can coach with Bob. Bob's a good guy." Well, then I had met Bob because I came out. I flew out to see my wife during Christmas break, and I went down to the gym and shot around, and my brother-in-law was on the team, and I spent some time, and I got to know him. So I started teaching with Bob. He was down the hall from me, and we got to be good friends, and so we started coaching together. And, you know, I think the one thing maybe Bob didn't teach me but really reemphasized was is that he was very structured.
Yeah.
Practices were organized, extremely organized. And his greatest strength was is he loved to teach fundamentals.
Yeah.
He loved the fundamental aspect of the game. And I think that was all stuff that reinforced the importance of that for me as a young coach, that those are non-negotiables, and you better build that into your practice when you're going to develop practice schedules.
Right. So when you took over for Coach Rip, what was the goal for you starting out as a young coach for the program?
Well, remember, I was with him for 5 years.
Yep.
And in about year four is when I expected to exit to go and join the State Patrol Academy in
right.
Shelton, Washington.
Yeah.
Well, when that didn't happen, you know, you have to step back. And again, God bless Glenda's heart. It was just the way it worked out. And so I didn't really know if that was something that I even thought was going to be part of the future.
Yeah.
And then Bob resigned a bit unexpectedly.
Wow.
He was a little frustrated. You know, he wanted to get kids to a higher level, and some of the kids that we had a group going through at that point that were a little bit more challenging. And then Terry came to me and said, hey, we want you to do this. And so that wasn't something that I really thought that I would do and wasn't even really chasing that dream at all.
Wow.
But then I had to kind of, you know, recalibrate and say, okay, well, if I'm going to do this,
yeah.
I'm going to try to make the best of it. And I
yeah.
certainly want to carry it well and advance it, and let's see how it goes. And so you're scrambling to learn a lot of things and pay attention to a lot of details. And
yeah.
I don't know. I think my goal probably at that point was don't mess this thing up. Let's at least try to keep it in a winning way. And
yeah.
So that's where I started at anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't
right.
have some grand vision, I'll be honest, because I didn't really
right.
think I'd be doing it that long.
Wow. So what are a couple of things you really enjoy about coaching?
I don't know. There's so many things that you enjoy about it. I think, first of all, that there's a part of me that's very competitive.
Yep.
So that allows myself to be a part of that. I think, too, the opportunity to teach kids in the setting where they just really, for the most part, really want to be there because, you know, they're not forced to play.
Yeah.
In the classroom, you know, a lot of times the kids are there because they need to be there.
Yeah.
But on the basketball court, they have the opportunity to make the choice. I really think it allows me to teach what something that's being lost in our culture in a big way, and you're going to just call me old school here, but I think it allows me to teach kids the connectedness of life.
Yeah.
That we don't live life in all these little compartments and then we get redos.
Right.
Like a video game where we die and all of a sudden we just start over. I think athletics allows you to see the kids in a different environment than the classroom. They get
yep.
to see you in a different environment, and you can piece together all the connectedness of life. Another thing, you know, I've been teaching Dave Ramsey since before anybody out here knew who Dave Ramsey was.
Yep.
In fact, I heard about him. I was back in the Midwest when he just started up, and I listened to his radio show, and I went back and I contacted the whole thing and got one of their first video series and started teaching it to every senior at Sunnyside Christian. Been doing that for years, that whole curriculum. And, you know, he always includes proverbs on his broadcast. I don't know if you ever listen to him, but
yeah.
he'll have the proverb of the day.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the things that I've taught these kids. You know, you open up the book of Proverbs and you talk about it. It starts right out there in Proverbs 1 about wisdom and discipline.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really celebrated in this culture anymore in any big way. Today it's all about emotions in the moment.
Yep.
And we talk about that. We're going to build character. We're going to teach these kids about what it means to be a young man that lives a godly life
yeah.
in a culture that isn't really encouraging them to do a whole lot of that.
Yeah.
And so yeah. that's a great part about coaching. You get to see kids mature, to grow up. You get to see them develop. And if you can get them to own all the details of the game, how much they improve over 4 years that they spend in your program.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say are a couple of things that are most difficult about coaching at the high school level these days?
We live in a very narcissistic culture.
Huh.
And
you
if you want to put very good teams on the basketball court, you basically got to do all you can to try to minimize and negate that narcissism.
Yep.
And, you know, you get these young guys that come in and I don't know, do you know who Brian Kane is?
Yeah.
The motivational speaker, Brian Kane. I use a lot of his stuff. I use some of it before I even know who he was, but he's, you know, kind of quantified it in that way. And I'll talk to these kids all the time. I said, you guys don't know what you don't know. In fact, you're not even aware of what you don't know. You have no clue of what it's going to take to be successful.
Right.
So you're either going to be willing to be shaped and molded and coached, or you're probably not going to be able to work with me a whole lot.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for you if you don't want to work with me, but you're going to get to the end of it, and you're going to look back, and you're going to realize how much you've grown. But if you don't give yourself the opportunity to even do that, you'll never get there.
Yeah.
So it's trying to get kids to buy into that the team is way bigger than they are.
Yeah.
And that's one of the maxims I have. I have very few rules. We hardly ever talk about rules with the program.
Mm-hmm.
But we do talk about expectations.
Sure.
And one of the things that I emphasize from day one is that no night player is bigger than this team. And if you think you're bigger than this team, then we're probably not going to work well together. And
right.
So you're either going to have to change or you're not going to be able to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's
tell me,
probably scary.
Yeah.
That's not something people really want to hear, but that's reality.
Amen to that. You got that right. So tell me, Coach, what you've been there for a long time. What has been so special about teaching and coaching at Sunnyside Christian?
This is year 32, straight out of college at age 22.
Yeah.
So this is my 32nd year. And I think I've stayed here, one, because of the strong community of Sunnyside Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Two, my in-laws live here, so
yeah.
My kids have had a grandpa and grandma here.
Right.
Three, I have a strong, strong connection to four siblings who live in Linden.
Yeah.
So that's a great out for us. We get up there 3-4 times a year.
Yeah.
And have a wonderful time. But I've stayed here just because I think the local support of this school has been consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And parents have been willing to allow me to work with their kids.
Yeah.
And develop those kids. I think that's all a part of it. Plus, I still like living in a fairly rural area. I don't think I would enjoy suburban living a whole lot.
No.
I spend way too much time. I still live most of my life outside.
Sure.
And I like those balances. And just to elaborate on that, this whole COVID thing with shutting down sports, about three of us as staff members got together in April and said, you know what, we don't have any sporting events to attend, especially as AD.
Yeah.
And we're hikers. So we set up a schedule to about every other Friday, all through this whole COVID thing and into the summer, we've set up a schedule to go hiking together.
That's fantastic.
And invited a bunch of people. So we've done a tremendous amount of hiking. In fact, I accomplished a goal that I didn't know if I ever would. And I don't know why I'd never done it. I think I've been up St. Helens 8 times. Every other year, another teacher and I, we take a group of kids, as many kids as we can get passes for, and we go up St. Helens.
Wow.
But I'd mastered that one. I've done Mount Aches numerous times, a bunch of other, you know, smaller mountains. And I'd never done Adams. And a couple weeks ago on a Friday and Saturday with 6 rabbits around me, these young bucks, including all 3 of my boys, we climbed Mount Adams.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, that mountain beat me up. It took me to the woodshed. I was with those young bucks, and we went up that thing, and it took me 7.5 hours.
Ooh.
Now, I know there's a lot of people that, you know, the majority of people do it in 2 days. We did it in one shot. We were on the trail at 3:57 a.m., and I stood on top of that thing at a little after 11:30, and the wind was blowing about 40 miles an hour, and it was so cold. My one son, his hands were so cold, we were in shorts, it was crazy, but he pulled out a pair of pants, and his hands were so cold, he could not tie his shoes. I had to go over there and tie his shoes. But it was
incredible.
A kick in the pants, and the glissading down was amazing. It was amazing. I thought I was going to die at first. But we came whipping down those snow fields, and it was awesome. Yeah, it was.
Oh,
man. It was amazing.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Coach.
And then I get down, and there's another guy that's hiked it a whole bunch of times. And he says, how'd it go? And I said, it went great, but it was hard. And he says, what'd you do? I said, we climbed the rocks. He said, don't ever do that again. That's the dumbest thing to do. That makes it twice as hard as it should have been. You should have had crampons and just walked up the snowfield.
Oh,
I said, thanks.
Man.
I didn't know that.
Oh, man. Now, hey, you're going to have to do it again.
I know. I really intend to. But if anybody's out there that wants to do it, get yourself in shape, because I'll tell you what, once you get to lunch counter, that last 4 hours it's brutal. And then, of course, you got the elevation that plays into it, and it works you over. My boys all want to do Rainier next summer. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
But I may jump on the wagon and try it. We'll see.
Hey, what else can you do? I mean, at least you can try.
That's right.
I
know that the first time you go up, though, I think you have to hire someone who's been up it before. They won't let you do it unless you go with somebody who's done it, if you've never done it before. So I'll let my boys figure that out. They'll see once. I'm sure they'll do it.
Yep, no doubt about it. So, Coach, let's talk a little bit about transformational coaching. You know, this game is not all about X's and O's, and the coach Dan Taylor at Kings, you know, calls it transformational coaching. And, you know, can you talk about building relationships? I know you talked a little bit about it earlier. And what do you think are some things that we can do as coaches to better nurture relationships with our players?
Well, I don't know. Have you read Jeff Duke's book, Three-Dimensional Coaching?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I think long before that was quantified, I think the good coaches in life.
Yeah.
And you could go back to some of the excellent coaches figured out three-dimensional coaching long before it became something that was put on paper.
Yep.
And I'll be honest, Dave, that's one of the things that I really spend time talking to the kids about. Now, we don't sit down and spend 45 minutes. This is all shared in bits and pieces.
Yes.
In five-minute segments, in a 10-minute pre-practice speech.
Right.
And I talk to them about the three dimensions of coaching. I say, guys, you know, we're working on fundamentals. And the fundamentals, obviously, are going to bleed into the X's and O's. That's all important stuff.
Right.
But then you have that next level. And the next level to me is where I think maybe we've done a pretty good job over the years. And that is thinking the game, the mental preparation.
Yeah.
The whole way to prepare your mind to get ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the third dimension that Duke talks about is this whole relationship building.
Yep.
Where you know the kids at a much deeper level than just basketball players.
Yeah.
You know them as young men that you're trying to work with to develop godly character.
Yeah.
To instill Christ-like values in them. And I think good coaches intuitively figure that out, and that's what makes them good coaches, because they figure it out pretty early.
Yep.
And so we've always used that model, and it may not have been as direct as it is probably today, but taking that and trying to really address all three aspects of that model as you walk with kids. Now, I'm assuming that's probably what Dan –
yes.
Is his name Dan Taylor at King's talking about transformational coaching?
Yep.
And that's where I think you have to do that. You have to bring them into your world, but you have to let them see that you care about them. And certainly there's so many ways to do that. The one thing that is crazy that kids just love, they love team dinners.
Yes.
I always think they're kind of annoying because you get to Thursday night and you want to go home after practice. No, those kids want those team dinners. They want that time together.
Exactly.
And they love those rides together. And some of the girls, they do these sleepovers. I'm too old for that. But, the kids enjoy that stuff. They really do. And that's how they get to bond in a way.
Right. Hey, do you got a story about building better relationships that has impacted a kid's life?
Oh, I don't know if I have one. You have so many.
Sure.
You've talked to Lance before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Lance, I'm always you know, shout out to him. I'm always amazed that he always brings up to me when we talk about coaching what an impact I had with him as
a
coach.
Yep.
That's one, obviously, but there's so many. In fact, I just walked out of church the other day, and there were a couple of kids. They're both in their late 20s now, probably. They both have kids. One of them has four former players.
Yeah.
And I walked by them, and one of them says to me the other day, because I don't see them a lot, and one says to me, "You remember the time that Matt got that technical?" And I said, "No, but I remember the time that I told you I was going to take you out back and whip you upside because you followed the kid on a three-point shot at half court." And he gets that stupid grin on his face. He says, "Yeah, I remember that." He said, "You were going to work me over if I ever did anything that stupid again." So, you know, you get stories like that all the time when you run into kids that are talking about things that you don't necessarily remember. But it's amazing the impressions that you have on these kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, the accountability. It was one time there was a former player who was living in Michigan now, and he was listening to it on the radio. He was listening to a state tournament game, and he said he heard my voice, and he says, like, "Guy, it just brought me back to practice every day. It was eerie." So, no, you have a lot of those stories and a lot of relationships, and it's amazing to see which how many former players, when you get to like a Friday or Saturday in the Spokane Arena, drop whatever they're doing and come over to watch those games.
Yep.
And if you win it, they're in that hallway walking over to those kids and shaking their hands.
Yep. Yeah, that's for sure. So, Coach, what have you done in your 24 years to continue to bring that family atmosphere into your program year after year?
You know, we're a small enough school that I don't know how much I have to do, and part of that is because I teach the seniors every day in class.
Yeah.
And so I have that built-in opportunity where they get to interact with me. Now, I also teach the freshmen second semester, but I see them in the hallways. You know, I'm the administrator.
Right.
I'm the athletic director.
Yep.
So in that respect, I think I have a built-in advantage where I don't have to go out of my way because I live with them.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm living with them. I'm seeing them in PE class. I'm seeing them in every class. I'm walking around them when they're eating lunch. I'm making sure their tail is back here after off campus because otherwise I'm going to take them in here and take it away from them.
Yeah.
So there's so much interaction. It's like a family in that respect. So to be fair to other coaches, I don't have to build that in. I work in the building. I live with the kids in the building.
Yep.
Whereas some other coaches, you know, they don't have that advantage.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, Coach, let's talk a little bit about the success that you've had at State B. 9 titles in your 20 state tournament appearances. What has been the key to your success? What's the secret sauce, so to speak?
Well, first of all, there's not one key.
Yeah.
It's a program. And I think that's the mistake that a lot of coaches, probably young coaches, make. They go to a clinic or 10 clinics and they think, hey, I'm going to find some secret sauce. It doesn't work that way. It's what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yep.
And I will tell you this right now. If you're not willing to bring more energy than your players to practice almost consistently every day, you're probably not going to get as much out of them as you could.
Yeah.
You have to go into those practices, and it's amazing. And that's what always impressed me about Coach Smink.
Yeah.
The guy's in his late 60s, and he's going to practice, and he's got so much energy.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, you can feel it when you walk in there. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
And I've always said that is a key. You have to, as a coach, bring that much energy, that much excitement and enthusiasm into your practices. And I would say probably one of the things that's maybe really helped us to be successful, especially winning close games when it matters the most. You know, Brian Keene's big thing is how do you get kids to play the best, their best, when it matters the most?
Yeah.
And I would say probably the amount of time we spent with mental preparation.
Yeah.
and getting kids to understand what it takes to get ready to play at a high level. We do a lot of crazy little things that, you know, other coaches may or may not do. But, you know, one of the things when we get off the bus and we walk into a gym where it's going to be a tough game, first thing I tell the kids is you walk the court. You walk around the outside court. You gauge the baskets. You visualize yourself making shots right now.
Yeah.
You do that before you ever get ready to go to the locker room.
Yeah.
So visualization is a big thing that we do.
Yep.
The other thing is I know a lot of coaches, when they scout other teams, they give their own kids too much information, and it almost paralyzes their own kids.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you can do that. I think you have to keep it simple, and you have to pick out two or three things that you're going to do defensively against the other team.
Sure.
And that's it. Because otherwise, the kids are thinking so much about the other team that they forget to do the things they do well.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do that. You know, Nick Saban's big on process over outcome, process over outcome. That's really true. I mean, that's a big deal. It is a big deal. We're going to go out there, and we're not going to try to step up. We're not going to try to do things that we don't do well in practice, because when you try to do things that you don't do well in practice, you just make mistakes.
Yeah.
And usually in a close game, it's the team that makes the fewest mistakes that's going to win.
Amen to that.
So we're going to keep our minds clear. We're going to try to cut the heart out of the other team. We're going to try to disrupt it.
Yep.
And that's going to be our goal.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do some fantastically crazy things to disrupt it. We're just going to make a few subtle adjustments. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't want to bring up names here. But, you know, a couple years ago, 2 years ago, when our friend Ryan Moffitt went off for 48 against Nia Bay, right?
Yeah.
And we had prepared a little bit for him because we assumed that we'd probably play him because we had a bye. And I said to the kids, we got three little plans here. This is the first one we're gonna do. And
yep.
If we aren't having success there, we're going to do this one. Well, the first one worked really well.
Yeah.
So we never even had to adjust to it. But it was just about getting kids out of rhythm. You don't have to stop them. You just got to knock them out of rhythm a little bit.
Yep.
And whether that means you're going to pick them up at half court, or you're going to get a little physical with them, or they like to shoot off their right hand, or they like to shoot off their left hand, we're going to disrupt that a little bit and make them a little uncomfortable.
Yep.
Now, if they got five players that you got to try to make uncomfortable, you're playing a really good team, and you're going to have your hands full.
Exactly.
And that's why they're really good.
Yep. Amen to that. Hey, pandemic question for you here a little bit. You know, us over here in the public schools, you know, I'm concerned about the mental well-being of our student athletes. And, you know, you guys are going now, thank God. But, you know, what are some of the things that we can help our student athletes during these times?
Well, Are you talking the whole political football that's involved here? I'll be honest, Dave.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to look once the WIA opens this thing up again with this dead time after the end of September.
Yep.
I'll be honest. I'd be shocked if we don't go to Idaho.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what's going on down there, but in Nampa, they're running tournaments every other weekend.
Right.
And I just talked to my assistant coach today, and I said, you know what? We're gonna try to get it going because these kids want to play.
Sure.
They're just chomping at the bit.
They are.
And the exposure to high school kids, the deep risk of it is so minimal.
Right.
And, you know, you've got all this thing, well, we got to worry about all these other people. Well, you're taking away all these kids' opportunities to do these things. I wish people would understand that.
Yeah.
So I think we could certainly do a pretty good job of safety, finding a happy medium with safety,
sure,
and still let them play.
Yeah.
I really do. And I don't think that's being done enough, and that's why I think we've stepped out and said, hey, we understand the risks, the parents have signed off, but we're moving forward.
Right.
And we're going to be as careful as we can be, but we're not going to cut and basically shut down their lives.
I totally agree.
But that's not a popular thought with a lot of people. So
no, it's not.
You'll probably get some negative feedback from some of those comments.
Oh, well.
That's life, huh?
It is. Exactly. Hey, Coach, during your 24 years at the helm, what has changed about the good or the game of basketball, good or bad, at the high school level?
Okay, biggest change that I see right now, the loss of community. I see that disappearing in many schools. And because of that, the kids are now a commodity, and you see way more super teams being formed.
True.
I could mention a number of schools over here
mm-hmm.
where these kids, they play on elite teams in 5th, 6th, 7th grade, and then they all somehow end up at the same school. Well, what it does is it kind of destroys the rivalries of the communities, because obviously the communities that they leave aren't going to have teams that are really that competitive anymore.
Right.
And they all go to one community, which they didn't grow up in. They just moved there just before they went to high school so they can play high school ball there. I don't think that's beneficial over the long run.
True.
I think that's going to cut away some great, great community pride.
Yeah.
Another negative, it seems like more and more in the communities, and maybe this is why this is happening, if your kid's not involved, you just don't have time for it anymore. You're too busy on social media.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the support, the amount of fans for consistently going to games is slowly eroding.
Yes, it is.
You know, people are so hyper busy, they're just running, and I don't know what they're all doing, but most of them aren't taking care of themselves very well. But
yeah.
I think those have been a couple of negative things
yeah.
that have changed over the past. I suppose for good, there's a lot of opportunity to play. There's a lot of opportunity to get involved.
Yeah.
But I don't see the school pride. And I'm not talking necessarily about Sunnyside Christian, but I'm just talking about all the teams we play
yeah.
and up and down the teams that there used to be a tremendous sense of pride in a lot of these little communities, and
sure.
it's gone. It's just gone. It's not there anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Coach, today in today's game, culture and accountability are the big buzzwords. So, how do you go about working with your players to continue those areas in your program?
Again, Dave, I think I have a built-in advantage because
yeah.
we're at a Christian school.
Sure.
And so the kids are very aware of our mission statement. They're very aware of what the expectations are.
Yeah.
Again, I said I don't have many rules, but I do have expectations.
Yep.
And I always tell them this game and this school is way bigger than you are.
Yeah.
And you're here to represent both.
Yep.
And we have to keep that big picture in mind all the time. And there's no way that we can be successful and win close, tight, emotional games if you're not buying into what we're doing. And so when we talk
True.
About behavior, we talk about the idea that you're going to be accountable to your peers. And if
yep.
you can't be relied upon to do that, then we can't count on you. So.
True.
That means you got to be to practice on time. You got to
yeah.
have the right frame of mind. Now, you're going to have a bad day now and then. I understand that. But we're looking at consistency and accountability. And without that, you don't get very far in the vocational world.
Sure.
You're not going to be a very good marriage partner, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So let's learn the right habits at this point in our lives, and let's go from there.
Right.
In fact, kind of crazy right now to start off my Bible classes. I'm teaching a series by Andy Stanley. I don't know if you even know who he is, but Andy Stanley, it's called Taking Responsibility for Your Life, Really. And that's the point of it, is taking responsibility for your life. And he's just got some great concepts in there that are amazing that kids need to hear and see. And I tell you, these kids, I tell the kids, you know, guys, businesses are paying speakers thousands of dollars to come in and speak to their employees about this stuff. You're getting it in school at
yeah.
15 and 16 years of age.
Yeah.
What a gift.
Yeah.
I know you don't see it as a gift, but let's see if we can see it as a gift.
Right. Right.
So the whole culture and accountability thing, I really haven't struggled with that a whole much.
Good.
I'll take a kid aside and I just frame it in a way and just say, you expect people to respect you? And you expect me to be able to rely on you if you can't even be here on time?
True.
It's not going to work that way.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get angry at you, but it's not going to work this way. So you right. either are part of it or you're not.
Yeah. So, Coach, you know, you being a lifelong educator and lifelong learner, you know, as you look back in your time in coaching and education, what has this experience taught you?
Well, I think life today teaches you that you do have to be a lifelong learner. In fact,
sure.
I stopped the video just the other day. We spent several minutes talking about the technology changes so fast. And
yeah.
I give them the example of my oldest son, Trevor. He's in agronomy, and agriculture is one of the cutting edges of what they're doing now with water management and fertilizer management. And I said, in fact, Trevor came in and led a chapel last year and just talked to the kids about what it's like to work out in that world. And I said, you have to be a lifelong learner. And if you don't respect your opponent and you don't respect the game, you're setting yourself up to be just blindsided at some point. So you better get used to learning all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's taught me that.
Yeah.
Things are always changing, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but you have to learn how to learn. And then stay on top of what you're studying.
Yeah. So, what has the game of basketball meant to you and your family?
Oh, wow. I may want to skip this one. I'll tell you what. It's an easy thing. To my wife?
Yeah.
She will say that when the kids were young, she was a little bit of a widow, a basketball widow.
Yep.
She does not love the game. She is not a big sports person. She supported the kids in the game, but she is okay when they're not participating in the game. So we found a really good balance with that as time has gone on. To my two oldest boys, it's pretty interesting because both of them have two rings.
Yep.
And so there's some bragging rights that go on between who played on better teams and who was better. And, now and then it gets a little dicey, but I think they're learning to handle it better as they get a little older. Neither one of them wants to concede anything.
Sure.
And so it's been fun, and I try to be a referee in that whole thing.
Right.
But, personally, there's so many memories. It's amazing. It's so many memories. Some of the best ones, we had a family that after we won a bunch of those championships up in Spokane, they would always rent a limo.
Yeah.
And so the whole team, after we would go back to the hotel and celebrate with the fans, then we would get in that limo and we had an hour.
Wow.
And I remember several times they'd take us away up on the South Hill in Spokane and overlook the whole city, and we'd stop and the kids are buying pop and stuff.
Yep.
And they're sitting in that limo and the music's going and the lights are spinning, and those things are priceless. Walking through the tunnel in the arena after the championship game and then coming out, you can't buy that stuff.
True.
You cannot buy that stuff. And that's why I always tell kids, basketball is a special thing, or athletics is a special thing, because, if you get married, usually you plan for it, and you acclimate to it, and you expect it. And those are awesome moments. And then you have children, and they're awesome moments, but you build up to it. Whereas in basketball, you walk into that arena, and it used to be 4 days, and now it can be four or three. And there's a hope, but things got to go well. You got to play well, and you can leave that thing devastated, or you can leave that thing elated.
Yeah.
And I said the emotion involved is so amazing. And so as a family, it's brought us together in that respect. I always, my daughter was a good little player, and then her first practice in high school, she tore out her knee. And she just shredded that thing. Her first official high school practice, she had played varsity all summer as just graduating from eighth grade.
Yeah.
And she tore so much in that knee that it wasn't until the second semester of her junior year when it was really healed, because she tried to play and and kudos to her, she handled it well, and it wasn't easy for her. But then by the time she was a senior, she said, Dad, I'm just not where I want to be, so I'm not going to do it. But you see that side of it too. And Trevor, he tore his ACL in college. Luke played his entire senior year on an ankle that was shredded. He had major surgery about a week and a half after the state championship game. So we've gone through a lot of injuries as a family as well.
Yeah.
And so you know, there's a ton of good and it outweighs the bad, but
yeah,
it's been a tremendous experience. And I'll tell you what, it's been time consuming too, but it's been good.
Exactly.
It's been good.
It takes a lot of time, that's for sure.
Oh, it consumes you, especially nowadays, because, you know, every Friday, Saturday in June, we're out playing again.
Right.
Obviously not this year, but we are. You know, it is. It's time consuming and late practices. I don't know how schools run it, but every other week we're late. So I don't walk into my house basically until 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And I get up at 4:50 every morning.
Yeah.
I get ready and I go for my 2.25-mile walk.
Yeah.
Before I go to school. And I'll tell you what, by the end of the week, when you're going to bed, you get an hour at home before you go to bed.
Right.
And so it's a huge commitment.
Yeah, it is. So, hey, let's pick your brain a little bit here, Coach. Talk about some of the best players you've coached or have seen in your coaching career.
Well, you know, two that stand out, obviously, coaching Lance.
Yep.
Lance Denboer.
Yep.
You know, just a phenomenal scorer and a phenomenal player, an amazing kid.
Yep.
And then, of course, the one that just graduated 2 years ago, Brock Hervé.
Yeah.
Both of those were phenomenal, you know, smaller school talents. Lance could have played at any level.
Yes.
And did, and obviously Brock Hervé could have as well.
Right.
And I could name a bunch more other players who were phenomenal. Clint Hull was a phenomenal player.
Yes, he was.
You go back to before my time, I've heard a ton about Blaze Burnham. I never watched him play because I didn't come here until 89.
Right.
And then, of course, you've had a ton of great players as we've walked through Northwest Christian. I'd like to focus a little bit more on just all of the very good players that I've coached.
Yeah.
And I don't want to mention names because I don't want to single kids out. It's like they always try to get me to say which team was the best. Which of your championship teams was the best?
Right.
And I just look at them and say, they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
They're all pretty good. I'll let those guys argue about that.
Yeah, exactly.
I've coached a lot of kids that were really fundamentally sound. They may not have been athletic enough to play at a high college level, but they were fundamentally sound and matured and grew and became really, really good basketball players.
Right. Yeah, that's one thing I can say about your team's coach. They didn't beat themselves too often.
No, we don't. We hate walking into a locker room and looking at ourselves and saying, boy, we let that one get away.
Yeah.
Yeah,
haven't done that
feeling
too many times, that's for sure.
No. No. No.
Yeah, so how about some of the best games you've coached?
You know, I'm only going to mention one game because it was an incredible game. It was back in 2010. It was in the fall of 2010. The group had won the state championship the year before, and I had just about everybody back. And we played. That was back when we were doing these epic battles with Coach Seibel and Riverside Christian. And we played Riverside Christian here, and it was an unbelievable game. I don't know how many overtimes it went into. But I know that Steven Broersma had 4 monster slams in the game. It was back and forth, and it was one of those games where there was just big play after big play after big play. And I know, I'm pretty sure Riverside, I think their point guard was a kid by the name of Derek Byrne. He was a lefty.
Okay.
He was phenomenal. And it was just one of those, I think we ended up losing. It was one of our 2 losses. We lost on a Friday and Saturday night back-to-back. We went down to Mapton and got beat, and then we never lost again, and we went back-to-back that year in 2011. And it was just one of those games that was just crazy electric. And then, you know, there's been so many big games, but you go back to probably the big rivalries when I first came here, and for a while, Mapton, Affolter was coaching.
Yes.
And then later, Brock Ledgerwood was coaching.
Yeah.
And just because the communities were close together, there were some intense rival games. And then, of course, the last number of years, the whole Yakima tribal rivalry has been phenomenal.
Yes. Yeah.
Intense games with them, just crazy, crazy fan support, packed gyms.
Yeah.
But then, you know, at state, there's been phenomenal games, too. And again, I can't single them all out because we've had so many good games that were fun. But, yeah. just so many big games to be a part of.
Yeah, that's great. How about some of the best coaches that you've gone head to head against?
You know, I didn't answer that one. When I saw that question, I was thinking more of, well, you know, when I moved here, Tim Coles was in his glory.
Oh boy.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, he had a good thing going there.
Yep.
And so he was big time. And that was right at the end, you know, and I saw him coach a few times. I never coached against him. Gene Smith at Reardon.
Yep.
Now, I'm assuming both of those guys were good. Now, I did coach against Tim, I think, a little bit, a few games, but he was kind of at that point getting ready to, well, I guess he did keep coaching all the way into the 2000s, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. You know, and Ray Ricks obviously has done a good job at Northwest Christian. I'm going to shout out a coach that is back from Iowa that is a legend there, and he coached at Western Christian, which was our big rival.
Yeah.
And his name was Jim Eakoff. And he was a rival. Now, we've got so many good coaches. You know, at the A level, there's good coaches. I know you interviewed Roger, and Roger obviously has been around forever and done a great job. I don't know all of the A coaches just because I haven't spent that much time. I don't get to watch that tournament hardly ever because we're always
you're always in.
And then, of course, there's good coaches. There's just very, very good coaches all around, and you could name a ton of them. Even though he coached girls, you got Stinson. He still wanders the arena, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites is old Billy Olson from Wakayaka. I run into Billy, Billy's just nothing but a spitfire, and I think he still got it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I hadn't seen him in a long time, and he shows up, and he's coaching
NaSalle
last year.
Yeah. Who would have thunk that, huh?
Yeah, and I knew Brian Macy really well, and I didn't even know Brian had quit.
Yeah.
So Brian quit, and then Billy takes over. And,
oh, man.
You know, and when we used to go to Soap Lake, you always had Eric Swanson was there.
Yeah.
And Billy Olson was there, and you'd had a whole bunch of those coaches, and we'd play them in epic. You know, in fact, some of the craziest games, Dave, that we've ever had were at Soap Lake in the summer.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy good games.
Yeah.
And then it got too expensive for us, so we started going other places. But I still miss some of that because there were some epic battles at Soap Lake.
Oh, I can imagine.
Later on, I met Bill Kelly.
Yep.
Now, he was a legend before I was ever in the state, but he was coaching Nooksack Valley, and they came down to Grandview, and I sat and talked to Bill Kelly for a long time one day.
Yep.
And don't really know how he coached. Don't really know much about him, but I know he won a bunch of titles.
Oh, boy, did he ever.
And then you got, you know, Pat Fitter, obviously got to know him. Again, didn't coach against him a whole lot.
Right.
But, you know, I had a lot of epic battles with Bruce Seibel when he was at Riverside.
Oh, boy.
Now, they ended up, you know, being a 2B school for a while, so then you lose a little bit of that rivalry because you don't play him in postseason.
Yeah.
But, you know, Dave, some of my greatest memories were when we joined District 6.
Uh-huh.
And we had about a 5 or 6 year run where we combined with them for regionals in the old Ellensburg gym.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, that Ellensburg gym was awesome. You could literally fall off the back of the bleachers and die.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, that's a great gym.
Yeah.
And we had some epic battles up there. And, you know, he became actually a pretty good friend. Oh, Mike Hole from Potero.
Yes.
In fact, I'm supposed to call him here soon. I hope he listens to this because I got to call him because he promised me that he was gonna take us, or we could go up there and go deer hunting with him this year.
Oh, boy. That'd be fun.
That's what I got to call him up. But those are all people you've gotten to know.
Yeah.
Even got to know Grumbaugh. Went up hunting at his place one time up at Curlew.
Oh, boy.
You know, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a ton of coaches.
Sure.
You know, you got that whole District 9 Whitman County that's had a bunch of good coaches over the years. And I think Kreider's probably doing a really good job over there now.
Yep.
And I'm sure I'm forgetting some people from the west side that have been. You know, I've gotten to know, Jerome Toby really well.
Yeah.
He does a good job up at Lummi.
Lummi, yeah.
And then I run into his old boss there. Well, I used to be the AD. Is he still there?
Sandusky?
Yeah, is he still there?
Yeah, he's still there.
Okay, I run into him now and then.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, old Nelson, Nelson's got it going.
Oh, man.
In the football realm there.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah.
I've actually had a lot of nice visits with Jeff.
Jeff's a great man, isn't he?
Talked to him quite a bit over the years with that whole thing.
Oh,
so
boy.
You meet so many coaches over the years.
You
and then
do.
Locally, you know, you get to meet a lot of the coaches, and you coach against them in the summer.
Yeah.
But they're not in the Bs. They're in the A's and the 2A's around here, and you appreciate all those guys too.
Yeah. Hey, last question, Coach. There's no doubt you've got Sunnyside Christian at the gold standard of 1B basketball. Is there more to do at Sunnyside Christian? So what does the future hold for you as the basketball coach?
Well, let me say this. I retired.
Yeah.
After 2012, after Trevor graduated. And
right.
I kind of expected to be done.
Yeah.
Brian took over, and about halfway through his second year, he just said, you know what, this is a lot of work as a dairy farmer, and I'm going to end it. And then son number two was an eighth grader.
Yeah.
And I had those parents come to me and said, would you consider it again? And I said, oh, man. It's a lot of work.
It is.
It's a lot of work to continue to keep a program at a high level. I don't think people realize how much work it is until you're involved in it. Because you cannot leave any stone unturned, and you're always at a school our size, and I'm probably true at the next level too, you're trying to develop talent. You have to develop talent.
Yep.
Because if you're not developing talent, you're not going to have it when they're juniors and seniors.
True.
So you're pushing freshmen, you're pushing sophomores, and those kids start to resent that a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, they do, because you're pushing hard. Now, they don't resent it after they are successful as seniors, but they resent it a little bit when they're younger.
Right.
And so you're pushing all the time. So I told those parents, I said, I'll do it 4 years.
Yeah.
I'll do it. And I knew there was pressure because there was a lot of expectation.
Yep.
So I got to the end of that fourth year, and then a couple of parents from the next group said, you got to do it another year. You got to do it. Okay, I'll do it one more year.
Yeah.
Well, then we go with a three-peat.
Yep.
And then, you know, the problem was is that son number three was an eighth grader.
Oh, boy.
Now... Son number three is a little different than son one and two, or sons one and two.
Right.
So I agreed to do it, and I did do it last year. And, you know, basically we were playing with the JV team from the previous year.
Yeah.
And an eighth grader who was my son, who was a freshman. And we took some lumps early, but by the end of the year, we had actually gotten to be a decent team.
Right.
But as we were getting down to the end of it, we were watching that crazy RPI.
Oh,
and I
man.
Knew there was one team in the bottom. I mean, all the way from teams 5 through 16.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 6 through 16. I would play anybody in a loser-out game, but there was one team I didn't want to play.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in the gym down at Walla Walla Community College.
Yeah.
And Garpell, it looks like they're going to get that game and win that district championship and beat Oaksdale.
Yeah.
And one of their guards tweaks his ankle. And it's enough. Oaksdale comes back, gets it into overtime, and beats them.
Beats them, yeah.
And because of that win, if it doesn't put ACH against us, and that was the one team I did not want to play because I knew we would have so many problems with the big kids.
With the race, yeah.
Well, we had no post players. We had no post presence. And I knew that we were going to have to help out like crazy on him. So we get up to Wenatchee, and we actually play well, but it plays out, and they get us they got us by 4 points, but, I mean, it was nip and tuck. In fact, there was one point in the fourth quarter where we're up with one, and one of the kids pulls a three, and that thing is down, and it comes out. And we couldn't get them. They got us. And they were a good team. And the crazy thing is the only reason they were there in the RPI was because Reese was hurt at the beginning of the year, and they lost a bunch of games without him.
Yep.
And, you know, they go and they take Odessa down to the last shot of the game. And I really thought we were good enough last year that had we not had that game, I thought we could have probably had a chance to place.
Yeah.
Well, we get to March, and I'm getting ready. We're lining up a whole workout schedule for all these young kids. I mean, because we got freshmen, and then COVID hits, and it blew everything up. And we've lost all that time with this group. And that's going to be hard because this is a group, you know, I've had groups where it wouldn't have bothered them a bit.
Right.
But this group needed a tremendous amount of direction.
Yeah.
So I'm well, do you really think we're going to have a season? Do you really think we're going to have a season?
God, I'm
Not
praying.
Not a school open over here?
I'm praying.
Are there any open over there?
None. Other than let's see, Lyndon Christian's open.
Well, Mount Vernon Christian.
Mount Vernon, yeah. The privates
King's
are
open.
King's is open.
Okay, but you really think right now, and this is still on the record, but where everything is in the government school system, that they're going to open up that fast and we're going to have a season?
I'm not going to hold my breath.
I'm not either.
Yeah. Well.
That's why I'm thinking that we may have to look at this whole Idaho thing as our season.
Yep.
And, you know, it's going to be hard on these kids. They lost baseball.
Yes.
They haven't lost football technically yet, but my inclination is I don't think it's going to open in December. We're going to be open.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing things, but I don't think the state's going to open up.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I have a whole different paradigm than what's going on right now.
Well, if that happens, I'm going to be one depressed dude. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy sauce. I mean, it is absolutely crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to do as much as we can with working out outside.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to try to do some stuff outside where they're distanced and stay away from each other.
Exactly.
Try to get them in shape a little bit, and we'll see what happens. I hope I've given you at least a little bit of information.
You have.
It's an interesting thing, but I will say this. I don't know how much time, you know, your question was about me here. I don't think I will coach a lot more. I have too many other responsibilities.
Sure.
And I'm getting older, and when you walk out of the house at 5:40 for a walk, and you walk into the house at 8:00, and that's when you don't have games.
Takes its toll.
That's a long day.
Takes its toll, matter
it
how old you are.
And so, I don't know. I may, people have said, well, you have to coach Cole out. That just wouldn't be fair to him. And Cole's like, no, Dad, you can retire.
Yeah.
You may retire. I don't necessarily need you coaching me all the time. But
right.
I think he appreciates it. But in the moment, it's pretty intense.
Right.
You know, if you're pursuing to try to win at a high level, you don't get a lot of breaks. It's a very intense thing.
It is. So, Coach, as always, I love talking to you. And I appreciate you coming on here and sharing some thoughts and wisdom with us, and let's hope we have a season.
Yeah, I do. I pray that we do. I hope we do, for the kids' sake, for my sake.
Yep.
It's just going to be a really unique season, and
yeah,
I'm sure
is.
As a league, you know, we're in this whole new league because we lost all these schools down to Oregon.
Yep.
So we kind of formed this great big league, and with you know, two sides here.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how much of any of that materializes. I have no idea what's going to happen. None.
Well, it's going to be tough. So, again, thanks, Coach.
You bet. And sometime I'll have to listen to this. Do you have a website?
Yep.
I do have some people that forwarded, and I listened to the Lance interview.
Yeah. Yep. I'll send you the link.
Okay, just send me the link, and how soon do you post it?
Within a half hour.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I don't mess around.
Okay. Anyway, thank you. I hope it goes well.
It is. It has. Thank you, Coach. Thanks for listening to the A and B Sports Report with Dave Tingle. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe and leave a rating and review. Again, thanks for listening.